No problem. So first of all, I got a name, Rafael Menashe Kopel Ben Naomi, that is very ill. So you should, this should be the Rafuaso, the Sarashah Chol Yisrael. And that's number one. Women come on a Friday morning and learn Torah, so that's a big schuss. Just that you came, just that you did the Or HaChaim Hill. And the Or HaChaim Hill with babies, so that's no mean feat. So we'll talk about two things that are unrelated, and this way Mrs. Hirsch will have something to talk to her husband about at the consulate. So one is on the Parsha, just because every week I go through the Parsha, so there's always so much to learn about being a mother and children from the Parsha. So this hit me last night at about 12 o'clock. It says in the Medrash that it asks, we have a big machokas between Korach and Moshe. Korach starts out with Moshe. So why did Korach fight with Moshe? That's what the Medrash says. So you're going to say that he fought with him because, he was jealous, plain old jealousy. But this Medrash says differently. It says that, what was Korach's father's name? Yitzhar. I'm not expecting any of you to be Balos Kriya. Yitzhar. It says that his father's name was Yitzhar. So what does Yitzhar mean in Hebrew? In English? Well, it's a Hebrew word. In English it means oil. Like we say in Shema, Tirosh Chavi Yitzharecha. So we say Tirosh, it's wine. And we say Yitzhar, it's, Vesirosh Chavi Yitzharecha, Masati Yitzhar, da 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 da. So you ever see a little kid imitating an adult Davin? Well, they'll open up a sit and they go, da 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 da. That's what we used to do when we were kids. So that just gives you an idea of how the children view us, and makes us want. You know the story with the Satmar Rebbe? That one time in Purim, one of his Hasidim asked if he can imitate him. So the Rebbe said, sure. The Rebbe was a funny guy, he had a sense of humor. So the Chassid gets up on the table and he starts crying. He starts davening and he's crying. So then he saw the Rebbe was crying. And he felt so bad. He said, Rebbe, I didn't mean to offend you. I mean, I asked you a shush, but I see that I hurt your feelings. I'm so sorry. He goes, no, you didn't hurt my feelings. But when I saw you imitating me, I thought to myself, maybe I'm imitating myself sometimes. You know that I'm so used to davening a certain way, so it's not real anymore. All that crying that I do isn't real. I'm just imitating myself. So kids imitate adults, and adults imitate themselves, so we have to be real. Anyway, that's off the topic. So it says that Korach, why did he fight? Oh, because his father's name was Yitzhar. We said Yitzhar was oil. So what happens when you take oil and you pour it on water? So the oil is going to be on the top. And therefore he said, I'm oil, so I should be on top. So that's what Korach was thinking. Korach is an oily guy. Not he didn't have oily hair because he was bald. Because Korach is bald. But he was an oily guy, so he said, oil's the top, so I'm the top man. And then he said, there's a pasuk in Zechariah. Interesting how Korach knew a pasuk in Zechariah. But the Medrash says he knew a pasuk in Zechariah. And the pasuk there says that the two sons of Yitzhar are standing, the two sons of oil are standing on the master of the earth. So does oil have sons? What do you mean the two sons of oil? So the Gemara says, the Medrash says, the pasuk referring to Aaron and David. So Aaron and David were anointed with oil. So Aaron, who was anointed with oil, he became the Kohen Gadol. David, who was anointed with oil, he becomes the king. So Korach said, wait a second. These guys are anointed with oil, and they're so important. Who am I? I am oil. I'm oil. So oil itself should be even more important. They're just anointed with oil. That's the Medrash. So what do you do with such a Medrash? You think that this is weird. Obviously, it's not weird. But that's what you think. What is it telling us? So he's oil, so therefore the oil floats to the top. And the oil is more important. They're just anointed with oil. They're important. But I am oil. My father's name is oil, so I'm the son of oil. I emerged from oil. I am an oily guy. So today they call people greasy. When somebody's really religious, they call them greasy. So oil, Yisrael wasn't greasy, he was oily. So what is the Medrash trying to teach us? So this great Hasidic Rebbe, his name is Rav Moshe Epstein. He was the Uzzur of a Rebbe. So somebody told me that he knew a Jew who said in his lifetime he met two perfect people, and one of them was the Uzzur of a Rebbe. He was a very, very holy man. So he said a very fascinating idea, that Korach wanted to be the leader. Why do you think he should be the leader? Because he's oil. And what is oil? Oil's on the top. So he figured that I'm the top guy. I'm on top of everybody else. That's how Korach understood leadership. Does that make sense? That the leader is on top? That's why he's the leader. Leader's on top. But what's a Jewish leader? Who's the greatest Jewish leader of all time? Moshe. And how did Moshe view himself? Humble. Moshe was very humble. So this is my favorite. There's a Medrash. There's a Ram. There's a in Parashat Shmos. where Moshe is arguing with Hashem, and Moshe says to Hashem, Shlach Nabi Yatishlach. They're arguing with the Sneh, and Hashem wants to send Moshe, and Moshe says, no, send who you will send. Shlach Nabi Yatishlach. Don't send me to redeem the Jewish people, send Biad, somebody else. So who is that somebody else?
Aaron.
So Mrs.
Klein.
Knows Rashi. Rashi says it's Aaron. That Moshe Rabbeinu, that's Klein, that's Moshe. Klein means small in Yiddish. So that he was small Moshe. He said send Aaron. So that's one, that's Rashi. There's another Medrash that says he was saying send Eliyahu Navi. That's a good thing. So there are other Medrashim that he was just pointing out, you know, suggesting all these different people. But the Ramban has a different shot. The Ramban is always my favorite. I think it's my favorite Ramban in the whole Torah. The Ramban says, Shalach Nabi Yatishlach means, send any human being on earth. The Ramban says, there's nobody more less qualified than me. This is Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, he wasn't joking around. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was not, you know, you don't find too many one-liners or jokes out of the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's a very serious gentleman. And he says to Hashem, there is nobody in the world, and when I looked it up again once, because I remembered saying nobody in the world, and I thought maybe he'd say at least nobody in the Jewish people. But if you look in the Ramban, he says there's nobody alive on the planet who is less qualified. Everybody is more qualified than me. So it really doesn't matter who you send. You can find some sanitation worker from New York City, and you can have him redeem the Jewish people. I don't know if they probably had made it to New York City yet, but maybe they had. So he can redeem the Jewish people. So Moshe Rabbeinu was an exceedingly humble person, and that's Moshe. He was Anav Mikol Adam, and actually in this week's parasha, it says that when Korach started up with Moshe, Moshe wasn't so happy. So what does it say? That Moshe fell on his face. Korach said, you know, well, what are you, why are you elevating yourself above the Jewish people? It's not right. So it says Moshe fell on his face. So, but he was talking to Aaron. So why didn't Aaron fall on his face? Why wasn't Aaron upset? So the Ramban here says that, you know why Aaron wasn't upset? Because Aaron agreed with him. The whole thing was he was fighting that Aaron shouldn't be the Kohen Gadol. So Aaron didn't have a problem with that. Aaron also thought he shouldn't be Kohen Gadol. So here you have a Ramban. That Aaron agrees with Korach. That he's really not worthy. The only thing is he has to do it. Why does he have to do it? Because Hashem said. So that's Moshe and Aaron. So therefore, what's a Jewish leader? A Jewish leader is not above the people. A Jewish leader is beneath the people. You're just a servant. Like a... There's a chazal like that Hashem says to Moshe, don't think I'm making you the leader. You're not the boss. You're everybody's servant. That's what a good, it's like a, you know, a parent. You know, the parent walks in the house and the parent thinks the parent is in charge. But in the end, the parent's really the children's slave. You know, give me, give me, give me. So, if that's the case, then what was Korach's mistake? Korach's mistake was that he thought a leader was in charge. And therefore he's Shemen, and Shemen's above. And Shemen floats to the top. And he didn't realize that in Judaism, the leader isn't above. The leader is really humble and modest and realizes that he's below. And if this happens to be his job, but he realizes that he's just a servant. So what does that mean practically? That means this is a lot of times like a parent thinks, you know, if you have a parent or you're a teacher, they think that they're the boss. They're in charge, and this person is their subject. So a child like has to listen to me. Why does a child have to listen to me? Because I said, I'm the boss. Like... You know, a lot of times power, they say, who was it that said power corrupts? I don't know, I've said it lots of times. So power corrupts, right? I like that. I like to take, you know, sayings of Aristotle and I say them enough and I can attribute it to myself because I also said it. It's not my fault he lived earlier than I did. So power corrupts. So what does a person think? A person thinks that, you know, after a while, they get used to other people listening to them. You have like a voice in a company, right? So he walks into the office and he expects the secretary is going to run and ask him if he wants a cup of coffee, and the workers are going to do what he said. And, you know, it gets to your head after a while. It's like when I first got married, like I was living in the dorm for a long time, and naturally I had to do everything myself. And then all of a sudden I got married, and then, you know, somebody's cooking me dinner and doing my laundry. And, you know, when I was a kid, it got to my head, and I'm like, you get used to it. And then you get unused to it because you don't have it anymore. And then, and after about two or three days, you start getting used to it again. And then you start wondering, like, where is it? Because you start thinking, like, people are here to serve me. So, and the Torah, it's not like that at all. Is that a kiva?
Yeah.
A kiva, I love you. The higher up you are, the more humble you have to be. The closer you get to, that's the whole idea of being so humble. Why was Moshe so humble? Because the closer you are to Hashem, you see the truth. You see what real greatness is. So once you see what real greatness is, you can never be a Baal Gaiva anymore. It's like, you know, somebody met the Rugged Shabbat. The Rugged Shabbat was possibly the greatest Jewish mind in the last 1,000 years. I'm saying he was so unbelievably brilliant that nobody could keep up with him. So anybody who ever thought he was a Talmud Chacham, so if he would go to the Rugged Shabbat, he would immediately be humbled, and he would see he's not as hot as he thought he was. So when you're so close to Hashem, you realize how small you are, and there's nothing to be haughty about. My Rebbe once gave a mashal. He had never been in an airplane before. So a few years ago, he went in an airplane for the first time, and he said when he was up in the clouds, he was looking down, and he realized that when you're really, really high up, everything on the ground, it doesn't matter how high it is. It could be the biggest building, but it looks like it's a little tiny toy building that, you know, you see on the floor. So he said when you're looking from up there, everything down here looks very, very small. So he said the same thing about Hashem. Hashem, when you're looking from high enough up like Hashem is, so nobody down here is really so hot. So there's no room for gaiva because everybody, so one guy's a little bit higher, one guy's a little bit lower, but from, you know, when you're in the clouds, there's no real difference between anybody. So that's what a leader has to be. A leader has to be humble, because when you're looking from high enough up, you realize that you're not so hot. And adarabah, the more of a leader, the better a leader you are, the more humble you have to be, because you're there to serve the people. You're not there to be above the people. You're there to be, what can I do for you? You know, how can I help you? How can I serve you? So when a person has it, when a person has a child or a teacher, so the child never has to listen to you because you're the boss. Like, where does it say this? Like some people, like I was just learning the Gemara last night. The Gemara has a nice curse, not a curse, but like a curse for a parent that doesn't let. I was laughing when I read the Gemara. It says that a father won't let his daughter get married because she's really helpful around the house. And the Gemara says it's not a nice thing to do because, you know, the daughter wants to get married and you're just holding her back. And I thought to myself, yeah, you know, I understand the Gemara. You know, I have one big daughter and a lot of little, you know, and three younger sons. So without the daughter, I don't know how my wife and I would manage. It's just like she's too helpful. So you want to keep the kid around for a while. And then, at age 40, when everybody's on their own, you'll let her be. But the Gemara says, Chas v'Shalom, you're not allowed to do that because she's not here to serve. She's not your servant. You know, the Gemara says when she comes of age, she's 12 and a half years old. The Gemara says, you have to get her married. The Gemara says, when she's ready. The Gemara says, when she's a Bogaris. So the Gemara, Bogaris, means she's 12 and a half. So I felt a little bit guilty. I'm a year behind. But the whole fight I'm having is my daughter says she wants to get married at 17. And I say, you're waiting until 18. But the Gemara says 12 and a half, so I'm not telling her this Gemara. Can you imagine, like, 7th grade Beis Yaakov girl gets engaged. You're like, wow. Somebody sent me a newspaper clipping the other day that there's a woman who just gave birth to her 18th. You heard about that? Yeah. Ramat Shlomo, was it? Wow, she lives. That's high. So anybody in a position of power is really in a position of service. So when a person is like it says about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says in the Gemara, that when you see the greatness of Hashem, you also see His humility. That Hashem goes down to the lowest places to help. You know, Hashem is concerned with every person and with every person, with every ant and with every little need. And that's Hashem's greatness, that He can go down. And that house has to be a parent or a teacher, that your job is to go down. And when you do ask, I always struggle with this, that whenever I ask a child to do something, I always have to make sure that it's for the child's own good. And a lot of times parents don't do that. Like a parent just doesn't, you know, is lazy or wants help or whatever it is. Like how much do you pay the person an hour that you should get help? The cheshbon has to be that this person has to learn, you know, what's it called? In general, obviously, sometimes you can ask for a favor. But some parents, like, really work, like some girls work to the bone. You know what I mean? The mother has, like, you know, 14. This mother has 18. Yes? And, you know, the daughters, you know, it's always Erev Pesach. You know what I mean? They're always working and doing this and doing that. And sometimes it's to the child's detriment. You know, some children don't have lives anymore. So the parent has to think always, is it for the child's good or is it for my own good? Now, it happens to be that's just, I don't want the young girl to go down the stairs or anything, even though we have nice stairs, but not nice for little babies. So the question is it to the parents, is it to the child's good or to the child's detriment? And that's a big question. So sometimes what's the parent's good, it's for the child's good, because the parent has to retain the parent's sanity. So that's also important. But when it's not a matter of retaining sanity, you know, just, you know, trying to get help. Maybe sometimes the child wants to play. So just like we wouldn't want to bother our neighbor, you know, sometimes we want something, we want to ask our neighbor, we don't want it because we don't want to bother them. So, you know, if a parent thinks that the parent owns the child, then you can ask the child, because this child is my indentured servant. But if you realize that you're there to serve the child, and Hashem just gave you the child as a gift, so you're not going to ask so quickly. You're going to think, I don't want to bother the child, but A, I need help, and B, the child also has to learn to do chores, and the child has to learn that the world isn't here to serve him, and it's a lot of times it's for the child's good. But well, that has to be the chesed. Yes?
Right. So can you tell us practically, let's say you have a child who has a need of being bossed, and you have to tell the child that you're not the boss, or I don't know, or something like that. You know, the child is, you're trying to teach the child to keep it out of aim or something, you know, kavod, just the general principle of kavod, you know, and that's like, when you put someone else in a kavod position, obviously you feel like they're the boss and you're not, so like, practically speaking, like, how does a parent have a conversation like this?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Like if
a parent is doing it for the child, then it's for the child's good.
But how do you teach the concept of anava if, you know, if Hashem is the ultimate boss, but you as a parent are the boss?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. That's the end of what I was going to say.
Sorry.
So, no, you're right. You reminded me. So then, what's the idea? Why it says that David and Aaron were anointed. David became king because he was anointed with oil. And Aaron became Kohen Gadol, he was anointed with oil. And we know that oil does flow to the top. And the Gemara says that when you have a student, you should instill fear in the students. And they were big tzaddikim who, the students would go to their shir. I once heard about a big Rosh Yeshiva, somebody described how he was in his shir, and he was terrified. He was terrified. And the last thing he wanted was that he should be called on. So what he did was he hid behind the pillar. And he figured if he's hiding behind the pillar, he won't be called on to read. So he says that and then when the rabbi was calling on somebody to read, he put his head down so they wouldn't make eye contact, so he wouldn't call on him. And in the end, all of a sudden his head is down, and he hears somebody whispering his name. It's like, Shlomi, Shlomi, he's calling on you. And he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is the worst day of my life. And he said that he read one line, and he was so in fear. That was all he had to do. He read one line, and then the rabbi ended up speaking for 3 hours about the Gemara. But he was just so traumatized by that, he went back to his room. He, you know, fell down in his bed as if he had just run a marathon. It was just a terrifying experience. They say being in this Rosh Yeshiva was a terrifying experience. And there's a Gemara. The Gemara says that when you're a teacher, you have to instill fear in the students. So we have that you should still instill fear, and we have that oil flows to the top. On the other hand, we have this humility. So the Gemara asked that question. And the Gemara's answer is that on the outside, you have to show that you're the boss. And on the inside, you have to be humble. And that's really an easy way to look at it. Because the child needs a boss. A child grows up healthy if the child knows there's authority and gives the child a sense of security. So the child needs to feel that you're in charge. But as far as you yourself are concerned, you know that you're not in charge of anything. And adirabba, when you look at the child, a lot of times you might be censuring the child and giving the child musr, but you know that in many ways the child is much better than you. Like we always have in yeshiva, they have staff meetings a lot, and they like start going through the boys. You know, this boy has this problem, and this boy has this problem. And I always wanted to have a staff meeting where we go through our own problems. And I says, oh, this boy doesn't really daven with kavana. You see, during davening he's mumbling. I don't know. I don't have kavana either sometimes. You know, let's sit and talk about, this boy has an anger problem. So, oh, I lose my temper also. Like, why don't we just go through each person and put up, but it's not like that. You know, like there, my Rebbe likes to say, we give the children report cards. So like at the end of the semester, the children should give the teacher a report card. Like the teacher needs to be judged, or who says the teachers, but sometimes the students are better than the teachers. Sometimes the students have more derech eretz than the teachers. Some students don't take phone calls in the middle of class, and some teachers do. So the teacher has to know inside, and the parent has to know inside, that in many ways the child is better than they are. And it happens to be true. There are many midos that children have that we don't have that we can learn from them. It just has to be the child needs an authority figure, so we have to show, and we have to teach, because we have what to teach. But that's on the outside. Internally, we have to know that in many ways the child is greater than us and really believe that.
I just went to a shiur one time and it was talking about kibud av and it actually was mind-boggling to me because I'm so used to like calling my parents and saying, could you do this for me? Could you do that for me? Mm. And the teacher said that you're not allowed. He said you're absolutely not allowed to ask your parent for anything. Mm. So, and it was really an eye-opener, and since then, I'm really more careful to, you know, like, for example, I was doing something with my bank in Holland, and, you know, and I was thinking, oh, let's call my mom for this and that, and then I thought to myself, no, you're going to try to find out, like, without your mom, like, you know, and, you know, it's interesting, because I never heard that before.
You have to know your parent, because for my mom, it was, that's what gives her life, and that gives her what, you know, when I ask her for something, that's what she lives for. If I didn't ask her, she would, you know what I mean? So you have to know what it's what the person wants. I mean, that's
the halacha. The halacha is if it gives the parent pleasure, then you're doing it for the parent. You're not doing it for yourself.
Right.
So you have to decide if it gives your parent pleasure.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a child comes home at the end of the day and the mother says, eat something. No, don't trouble yourself. So the mother's great, you know, she's Jewish anyway. The mother's greatest pleasure is to see your child eating.
Right.
So if it's your mother's pleasure, then you're allowed to ask. But if it's not your mother's pleasure, then you're right.
Right.
Then the Gemara talks about, you know, making your parent your messenger. And the Gemara says that it's chutzpah, that a person should make a parent a messenger. The Gemara there is talking about using your parent as a messenger to marry you off. Like, you know, let's say there's a guy and he says to his father, can you give this girl money on my behalf and marry her on my behalf? So the Gemara says, like, how can that be? That's chutzpah. Your father is your messenger. So, but if you know that that's what the father would want to do, then you're 100% not only allowed to, but that's what gives the parent pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, like, you know, they wilt away when they think nobody needs me anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's especially important where people are old to make them feel useful.
Mm-hmm.
And they are useful, but also to make them feel that way. So really it goes both ways. You know, they always talk about kibud horim. So obviously a parent doesn't have the same obligation to honor a child as a child has to honor a parent, but there still is a concept of a parent honoring a child. So where do you see that? Because we know that you have to honor every human being. So a child is also a human being. I always like to tell the story of my mother. When I was a little kid, sometimes, you know, we'd really get on her nerves, or I would anyway, and she would say, you know, I'm a human being too. And I was looking at her and saying, Mom, what do you mean by that? Like, I never thought of you that way. You're also a human being. You're my mom. Like, but moms are human beings too. And then when you get older, you realize that, yeah, she's very human. So, but as a child, you just think it like you're the all-powerful mom. So, a child has to respect a parent. But again, that wouldn't be such a novel idea that a parent has to respect a child, but that a parent has to respect a child. That's a more novel, and it's really every person. That every person we see, like it says about Moshe Rabbeinu, that every person, he thought that every person was mamish greater than him. My Rebbe told the story about his grandfather. He was standing there. His grandfather was this big Hasidic Rebbe, and he was once at the Kotel, and he was all the way in the back where the cars are parked, and he had a really, really, really bad legs. In the end, they had to amputate. Really, really big walking problem. So he met this guy, and he said, Shalom Aleichem. And the guy said, if the Rebbe knew what a criminal I was, the Rebbe wouldn't say hello to me. So he said, No, I would. Shalom, you're a good guy. You're a good guy. Don't talk about yourself the way he says, no, Rebbe. I just sat in jail for a while. I mean, the guy had done a really, really, you know, they don't put a guy in jail for, you know, talking in the middle of davening. The guy had done a really, really rotten thing. And he was sitting in jail, and now they had just been released from jail. And the Rebbe said, I promise you, you're greater than me. So he said, cut it out, I don't believe you. He goes, all right, I'm going to go to the Kotel, and I'm going to swear that you're greater than me. Now, in Judaism, we don't take swearing lightly. It says that you shouldn't even swear the truth. We certainly don't swear falsely. So my Rebbe, who was his grandson, he was standing there, and that's the man on the wall. So he was standing there, he's like, you know, Zadie, we really have to go, I have things to do. He's like, no, I'm going back to the wall. So you can imagine an 80-year-old man walking all the way from the back over there where they park the cars, all the way, and the Ezra's Nashim is even closer, but you can believe that he didn't go to the Ezra's Nashim, he went to the men's side. So he goes all the way to the men's side, he goes up to the wall, and so the guy could hear, he says, I swear that so-and-so, Ben so-and-so is greater than I am. And that was it, and then he went back to the car. So I heard, what? So he really honestly believed, and I guess maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not allowed to say that because, you know, you're not allowed to say that about the Rebbe, but maybe in some ways the guy was greater than him. He had done, you know, some horrible avera, but who doesn't have some aspect of their personality, some deed, good deed that they've done in their lives that's something that I haven't done. So you can really look up to every person and certainly children. And then when you, and that really brings us to our second point. The second point, and the last point before Mrs. Hirsch. Yes.
No, I just want to say the other element is our kids are learning how to speak Vermont, but we're not gonna speak to them with respect. I mean, they're gonna speak to us exactly the way we're speaking to them.
Exactly.
So we have to role model for them. I mean, I just know because I'm like, how did the kids speak to me like that? And then I think the law is not speaking to them in a respectful manner.
Right.
So we have to role model.
Right. That's why if a parent hits a lot, then a kid learns that that's what you do when somebody gets on your nerves. You hit. So, you know, it's like in certain neighborhoods, I grew up near one in New York, you know, when you get angry at somebody, what do? You take out a knife. That's how you deal with friction. You just take out a knife and you threaten it. You say, I'll kill you. So there's, you know, I'll kill you that, you know, a kid says in the playground, but there's a, I'll kill you. Like, they mean it. So that's how they're not that, well, I don't want to say they're not. They're not that way naturally, but that's the way they learn to deal with friction. When somebody gets on your nerves, you kill them. So that's really, being an example is very important. So last week, we were talking about how to help somebody grow. It was something about that. And then I said, Mrs. Hirsch, how would you do that? And she said that you have to really give the child encouragement and make the child feel good about himself. So that was what she said. And then this week, I just happened to be learning about the story of Chana, and I saw something in Mamisha, I jumped. So we all know the story of Chana. Chana didn't have children, and her co-wife Penina had children. And then she felt really, really badly about that, because she really wanted children. So she went up to the Mishkan, and she started to daven to Hashem, please give me children. And then there was a man there named Eli, and Eli thought she was drunk. Right? And even he had a proof, because it said on the breastplate, it said the letters Shin, Kaf, Resh, Hey, which spells Shikora. So he thought she's Shikora, she's drunk. But really, he didn't interpret it correctly, because it was really Ksheira. So, anyway, so he thought she was drunk. And he said to her,
kosher?
She's a kosher woman, yeah. So, not in the edible sense, but in the good deed sense. So he said, like, why are you getting drunk? So she said, don't accuse me of being drunk. I'm not a drunkard. I'm an embittered spirit, because I don't have children. So Eli heard that, and he appeased her. He said, you should go in peace. And then he said, and God should grant your wishes. Those are the two things he said to her. So from here, the Gemara learns that
Did he say, I thought I'm enough for you?
What did he say? Oh, no, that was your husband. That was Elkanah.
Oh, Elkanah, right.
He said, I'm like ten sons. That's like a big question.
Right.
So first of all, she didn't answer. And I was learning the parasha, so she didn't answer. Like, why didn't she answer him when he said, but I'm like 10 sons? So it could very well be that she just didn't really want to make him fort. Is she going to say, no, you're not? Like, you're a great guy and everything, but I really want my own children, thank you. Like, a husband isn't everything to me. So maybe she just didn't want to make him feel bad. In any event, so that was her husband, Elkanah. But this nice man, this nice Eli, so he said to her, what are you doing? So he gave her a bracha. And he said, God should grant your wish. And in the end, God granted her wish. And he gave her a child. So, it's actually interesting that the child she asked for, it says in the Gemara, she said, I don't want a child who's too smart or too dumb or too tall or too short. I don't want a child who's 6 out. I just want an average kid. That's what she asked for. And she ended up having Shmuel, who became a great tzaddik. Whereas, I was thinking about this week's parasha, it says that Korach, he saw in his Ruach HaKodesh, actually, that he would have a great, great grandson like Shmuel. So he had this nevuah, and this nevuah made him think that he also deserves to be on the top if he's going to have a child like that. So sometimes when you have nevuah, your high madrega, that really brings you down. Because that high madrega that he had, that he was on such a high level that he was a prophet, it ended up being his downfall. And last week also with the Meraglim, we saw that it says in Rashi they were very important people. They were like top, you know, tzaddik. I mean, today they'd be wearing long frocks and rabbinic hats and everything and long beards and, you know, gray beards and, you know, thick svarim under their arms. And they ended up, you know, being tremendous rishayim. So that people say, but it's a contradiction. How could such important people sink so low? But that's exactly it. Because they thought they were so important, they sunk so low. So sometimes it's not so good to think you're important. It's good to, that's what she asked for, and she ended up with a great son. In any event, so the Gemara says that when you falsely suspect somebody, in English we say when you cast aspersions upon somebody, so you have to do two things. You have to apologize, you have to appease the person, and also you have to give them a bracha. And that's what Eli did. He said, you know, you should go in peace. That's his way of appeasing her. And he also said, God should grant your wish. He gave her a bracha. So Rav Kook has a commentary on the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, and he explains why you have to do these two things. Why do you have to both ask them, you know, appease them, make them feel better, and also give them a bracha. He says that when you falsely suspect somebody of doing something, you really harm them in two ways. Number one, you hurt the person's feelings, because when you think that I did an aveira, so it hurts my feelings that you thought negatively of me. So that's number one, that we can understand. But he said you do something else. What happens when you think you're important in somebody else's eyes? Like, let's say somebody says, you know, oh, about you. You know, Mrs. So-and-so is such a balas chesed. Such a balas chesed. Her home is always open to everybody, and she always has a smile for everybody. And, like, that's your reputation around town. So what happens? Somebody knocks at your door. And you open the door, and the first thing, all of a sudden, there's that click in your brain that says, I'm the balas chesed. I'm the one who has a smile for everybody. So what do? You say, hi. Because you want to live up to your reputation. Let's say you have a reputation of being like a really, you know, not so friendly, not so warm, not an open home. So somebody knocks on your door, and what do you say? You say, oh, I'm not the not friendly person. So you open the door, yeah. Because you're like, you have a reputation, so you want to live up to your reputation. So that's really, I mean, especially it goes like that in children, because they don't really have a self-image besides what's projected them to the outside world. But even adults, a lot of times, when somebody, especially sometimes you get a compliment, and then afterwards you want to live up to it, like somebody would say to you, you know, I saw you davening, it was so inspiring. You know, you're such a spiritual person. And then afterwards you think to yourself, oh, I'm such a spiritual person. So it like makes you want to daven again. So that's what happens. So when somebody falsely suspects you of something, so it lowers your own self-image, and then you don't have anything to live up to anymore. So you don't have anything to live up to anymore. So then you don't become the person who you could be, because you think, I'm a nobody. So if you think you're a nobody, you're going to live like a nobody. So there's a shlach. The pasuk says that, al tochach leitz, don't rebuke a mocker, a clown, pen yis ekna. Because if you rebuke a clown, the clown will hate you. But the pasuk says, ochech l'chacham v'yaveka. You should rebuke a wise person, and the wise person will love you. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is a wise person wants rebuke, and a clown doesn't want rebuke, so don't rebuke a clown, rebuke a wise person. But there was a great rabbi who interpreted the pasuk differently. He says, al tochach leitz, don't rebuke somebody and tell him he's a clown, because he'll hate you, because you put him down. But ochech, rebuke somebody and tell him he's a wise person, and he'll love you. In other words, the rebuke should be, oh, you know, you're so special, you're so wonderful, how can you do this? It's beneath you. That's what he said. Oh. So, if that's the case, that's what the Gemara means. The Gemara means that when you falsely suspect somebody, you have to do two things. Number one, you have to appease the person, because you hurt the person's feelings. The other thing you have to do is you have to give them a bracha. Why? Because what is a bracha? So a bracha is really two things. Number one, if a person has a bracha from Hashem, so that's going to help them reach their potential. Because Hashem is, if you don't have what you need, then you're not going to be able to reach your spiritual potential. But if Hashem gives you what you need, then you're going to be able to reach your spiritual potential. So when you falsely accuse somebody, so now not only do you hurt their feelings, you have to appease them, but now you impeded their spiritual growth. Because now they think low of them, they think negatively of themselves. And now that Hashem is, you gave them a bracha, now they're going to be able to fulfill their spiritual potential, because Hashem is going to give them what they need. And it's even more than that. Because why does Hashem fulfill a person's tefillah? It's a famous question that philosophers ask. Why does, how can it be that Hashem answers your prayer? If before you daven, Hashem didn't want to give it to you, how could He change His mind? Hashem doesn't change His mind. So the answer is that Hashem didn't change, you changed. You became a different person. You're not the same person you were before you daven. That's the idea of davening. That you're elevated. You're on a higher plane. So now Hashem's going to answer you. So when you give somebody a bracha that Hashem should answer their tefillah, what you're really saying is, you should grow as a person. You should become a greater person. So what Eli was saying to Chana was, Hashem should fulfill all your wishes. Meaning you should become a greater person. I suspected you of being a drunkard, and now that's the way you're going to view yourself, as being a low person. So now that Hashem is going to fulfill your request, not only are you going to get what you need in order to fulfill your spiritual potential, but also you're going to be, but if Hashem answers your tefillah, that means that in order for Him to do that, you have to become a greater person. So therefore, I'm giving you a bracha that you should be a greater person. So that's so important, that when you relate really to anybody in the world, that when you make them feel wonderful and special, so they're going to want to live up to that reputation, and they're really going to become that way. It's not only going to be descriptive, it's going to be prescriptive. Because they're going to say, ah, you know, that's who I'm supposed to be. And they're going to want to live up to that. Whereas when you falsely suspect somebody, you lower them. And they say, yeah, that's who I am. You know, I'm a lazy person. You say, somebody's lazy. Say, but say, I'm lazy. So that's, I'm being who I'm supposed to be. So that's really, that relates to the first thing we said about somebody being great. how to make somebody great. The way to make somebody great is to make them feel that they really are. And then when they have that inside themselves, they can pass that on to the next generation, which is really the goal of the leader, any type of leader, is to pass on to the next generation how special and wonderful. And that's really the way we're supposed to view other people, how wonderful they are. And if they see that they're wonderful, then they're going to really feel that way and live up to it. And then they're going to want to make other people feel wonderful. So that, with that, we conclude our remarks, and we wait for the ladies to add their own comments.
That's the halacha that you do if you fall sick, because you should.
That's what the Gemara says.
The Gemara says that. Do we follow that?
I mean, it's not Paskin and Shulchan Aruch, but it's that would be called good advice of Chazal.
Yeah, right. Very good advice, because I mean, it's easy to follow that and say, "I'm sorry, I thought it was you," but then actually add a bracha.
Right, and what the Gemara is telling us is that we wouldn't have thought. We would just think you have to say sorry.
Right.
And the Gemara is saying it's not enough to say sorry. You also have to give a person a bracha, and we just explain why. Because now there, you know, now you have to elevate the person's self-esteem when you know after you lower the self-esteem. So that's the Seder. So now you have what to think about, and Amir Hashem, we should all be zocha to live a life as Hashem wants us to. What's your name? And what do you do here?